Thank you for joining us today for this special podcast. My name is Greg Coleman with Service Strategies, and I'll be your host today. Today's topic is customer advisory boards. And we have our special guest today, Lisa Norell. Lisa is the Chief Energy Officer of Energize Growth. She helps B2B companies grow customer wallet share, employee mind share, and market share. Lisa has worked with companies such as Sony, BMC Software, Trend Micro, IBM, and hundreds of B2B companies across 9 countries. She's a seasoned expert speaker and advisor with 28 years of hands-on experience. She also recently spoke at our annual conference and was very well received. Lisa recently authored Energize Growth Now, the Marketing Guide to a Wealthy Company. In addition, she's an expert blogger on strategic growth planning for Fast Company magazine. We invited Lisa today to share with us her most recent findings on what it really takes to build effective customer advisory boards. So Lisa, maybe you could tell us a little bit about what is a customer advisory board and what are their purposes.
Great. Hi, thanks Greg for that introduction. What I learned when I interviewed close to 30 companies who had either successfully launched customer advisory boards or had some fits and starts with customer advisory boards is that the real customer advisory board, which I'm going to affectionately call a CAB, we're going to call it a CAB, is a structured program for continuously improving your customer and your community relationships. So unlike other forms of gaining input and developing relationships with customers, such as focus groups, user groups, impersonal online surveys, and other types of gatherings, which might be more like recognition events, a CAB really is creating a safe, confidential container for companies and key executives to share ideas, discover new innovations, forge new friendships, and oftentimes resolve strategic issues that they might be having with your company.
Great. So what motivated you to study the CABs, Lisa?
Well, as you know, I've been spending the last year and a half traveling around the world and talking about my book, and there was some very disturbing research that came out of the Rain Group and Shattuck Group, a consulting firm in California. And they went out and they talked to about 130 services firms, and they asked a very simple question. When did you last conduct a formal research project about your ideal clients? And believe it or not, this was back in 2009, they found out that nearly 61% of the companies that they talked to have never even conducted such a project. So can you imagine some of the service strategy community members trying to go forward and build, you know, spend millions of dollars in research and development on new offerings or new services without even gathering feedback from some of their great clients or customers? I mean, to me, that was just such a staggering number. And then the other thing that really jumped out at me is that companies are now coming out from under the rock now that the recovery is in full swing, and they're starting to ask some really powerful questions again. At the strategic level, they're asking questions like, how can we deepen our executive sponsor relationships so that the relationships themselves become true competitive differentiators? And this is especially true for a lot of Service Strategies members who I've met, because many of them are really running companies that operate in a rather commoditized space. So imagine if your company isn't differentiating itself by new features and benefits that it's offering with its software or solutions, but in the quality and the deep relationships that you're fostering. I think that one of the main contributors, for example, of Siebel Systems' rapid accelerated growth back in the late 1990s when I was there is that Tom Siebel was a very clever man, and he went out and forged very good alliances with Charles Schwab and Accenture, and is in fact featured in David Thompson's book, Blueprint to a Billion, because those relationships really served the company well and differentiated them in what soon became a very commoditized CRM market space. So that was the first question that I think a lot of companies are now posing. Another one that they're asking is, what are our sources of innovation so we can start growing again? And the third thing that they're asking is, how can we become the hub of thought leadership in our customer community? So imagine being recognized as the source of great people, great resources, and great knowledge. Not necessarily having to provide all the knowledge yourself as the company, but bringing together the greatest of minds. And those are the types of breakthrough questions and strategic questions that leading companies are now asking again.
Great. So tell us about the companies you studied and maybe some of the common traits that they possess.
Well, some of the common traits that successful CAB program leaders possessed was there were really five that they had. One of them is they had to be sincerely growth-oriented. If they were running a lifestyle business or they were in that life cycle of decline as a company, a CAB was not really appropriate for them. The second is they have to be passionate about developing trusted advisor relationships. So if their real focus or their value proposition is just about, you know, generating more volume and developing just basic transactional relationships in their given field, they're really not this is not a good fit for a CAB program. The third is that building community is a priority to them. One of my favorite vendors is out of Raleigh, North Carolina, which is called Eye Contact. And you may have heard of them. You know, they really started the company about 8 years ago, and Ryan Alice built this company and has been very successful, not because they build better e-newsletter technology than Constant Contact or some of their key competitors, but because they really care about building strong, loyal customer, employee, and nonprofit communities. The fourth thing that really these CAB members have in common is that they're able to adapt quickly to shifts, which plays off of the final characteristic that a lot of these candidates for CABs have, which is they have to be willing to actually implement some of the recommended actions that their customers or that their marketplace presents to them. Nothing will break your CAB program in half faster than if you bring people together, you're asking them to invest days of their energy over the year to be with you, and then you gather all this great information, you document it, you put it on a private forum and store it, and then you don't take action. Surely you've probably stumbled across a few companies like that in your career, Greg, where it's just a bunch of data gathering, but nobody acts on it. So those companies are not ideal candidates for these programs. So those are when I studied these companies, and now as I work with companies to help them really expand market share as a consultant and advisor, those types of characteristics have to be in place and must be part of the culture.
Super. So you talked a little bit about some of the mistakes, but what are some other common mistakes B2B companies make when forming CABs?
Well, we're just human beings, and sometimes the sneaky ego creeps in, and the senior executives get a little overzealous about launching the program. One managing partner of a large services firm actually was so excited about launching a CAB that she almost invited her biggest client, which was run by a well-known billionaire, to be the charter member of this group. So she was really convinced when she invited him that, you know, this person being on our board would really enhance our brand repute and client retention. But what really happened was that the billionaire was so distracted by other ventures and other businesses that he was running, he would have made a terrible CAB member. So that's probably one of the biggest mistakes that a lot of companies make, is they think the first step to launching a CAB is to invite people to the CAB, Whereas, as I'm going to tell you at the end of our discussion today, there are some very important stepping stones you have to put in place before you start talking about whom you're going to invite to the program. So that's really the first one. The second one is really not knowing the purpose of your CAB and thinking that a CAB is your forum to ask lots of questions about your products and services and that it's all about you. One person whom I talked to is the president of the Guillen Group, and they've launched probably 150 different CABs for their clients. And he told me, he said, if you're doing more than 20% of the talking in those CAB meetings, then you're not being a good CAB program sponsor. You have to make it about the customer. The third thing is confusing a CAB with other forms of customer relationship development programs. So you start to treat it as if it's a user conference or a focus group, which is often very, again, concentrated on getting feedback about your products and your services. And then finally, using the CAB as your mutual admiration society gathering and selecting members who are either all your biggest customers or are all in love with you and will only foster groupthink. So those are some things that, you know, in speaking with these dozens of companies that they said they've either made the mistakes themselves or they avoided those mistakes along the way.
Excellent. So, Lisa, what steps do you think companies need to take to launch a successful CAB?
There are several, and I want to remind people that you can actually email me and I will send you a copy of the white paper that I wrote as a gift to the Service Strategies community just by emailing me at lisa@energizegrowth.com, and this will go in a lot more detail. But there are a few things that you can do as you consider launching your CAB. First is make sure you allocate. There are three things. First of all, allocate enough time to get the CAB launched. One gentleman from a software as a service provider in San Francisco told me, our first step or our first try at a CAB didn't go so well. We thought it would only take us 90 days. In reality, he said, we needed 6 months to really form a CAB with 6 to 9 members who would be really dedicated and, you know, that we could help in this group. The second thing is be sure what the purpose of the CAB is. Defining the purpose, communicating that purpose so that you're attracting and recruiting the people you really want on the CAB. And the third is defining the profile of the ideal member for the CAB. Not only did I learn that great CABs typically have between 6 and 15 members maximum, but I also learned that you have to be really clear about the kind of people you want in the CAB, the size companies, the maturity of that customer over a customer beside them that's in the group, making sure you don't just invite your top 10 customers to this program, because God forbid you will have to let some of these members go every year to allow some healthy 20 to 30% turnover. Goodness me, the last thing you want to do is upset one of your top customers and make them feel like they weren't appreciated and valued. So you've got to keep a very healthy mix of large and small customers on the CAB. So those are some just to get you thinking. And there are a host of others that I learned that you can read more about when you contact me to download the full report.
Great. So you mentioned the one company indicating that they really needed about 6 months to start their CAB. Would you say that's typical for most companies?
Well, at least the ones that I studied and also the people whom I interviewed who make their living launching CABs have told me that it's very common. I mean, 4 months if you're really aggressive, but they say give yourself some breathing room and give yourself that 6 months and allocate at least 140 to 180 hours of time just to really get it designed properly and set up and position the program as a strategic component of your growth strategy.
Excellent. So Tell us about how companies might measure the ROI of their cabs, and also maybe you could tell us about one to two companies who've successfully launched a cab.
Oh, certainly. I had a lot of great stories and successes. I had the pleasure of interviewing companies ranging from Sage Software to Toro, Harlan Financial Solutions, and some large software security firms, as well as some firms that were $10 million in size. So I really heard some great stories. And I'll give you a couple of examples and also some of the common metrics that people were tracking. Some of the metrics included the number of new innovations that are coming out each year. Another was savings in R&D costs. One company told me because of the cab, they avoided prematurely launching a new system and service before it was ready. So they estimate that in R&D costs alone, they saved over $1 million. Several other companies told me that they measure year-over-year customer wallet share growth. Another company out of Seattle, Washington, told me that they measure the number of customer advocates that they have each year. One company in particular, I'm not able to name them, but they sell services and products to the enterprise market. They have well over 700 enterprise customers. And what they did is they looked at two different populations. They looked at 350 of their customers who were not members of a cab against 175 customers who were in a variety of different cabs. And here's some really interesting numbers, Greg, that I think knocked me off my chair. The ones who are not cab members, the annual retention rate of those customers was 77%. And on the average, they spent 5%. They had 5% annual growth in spend with that company year over year. For those 175 that are members of a cab, the retention rate of those customers was 95%. And their annual growth in spend with that company was 15%. So these can be pretty darn compelling when you think about it.
Absolutely. Well, this is great information, Lisa. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how people can learn more about successful cab programs.
Well, it's real easy. Just have people contact me, lisa@energizegrowth.com. I have a couple of audio interviews with companies who have successfully launched cabs, and they'll share their stories. And I also have a 10-page white paper I'm happy to share with people. Just send me that email to lisa@energizegrowth.com, and in the subject line, put cab report, and I'll make sure that you get it.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, I'd like to thank everybody for joining us for today's special podcast on customer advisory boards. You can learn more about service strategies by visiting our website at servicestrategies.com. Thank you.